So actually, today I thought of start to discuss a new sutta, and this is called Uraga Sutta. So basically, Uraga Sutta is quite interesting phenomena discussed by the Buddha, where the serpent. So this is also coming in the Sutta Nipata, as we already discussed. Sutta Nipata is one of the very classic books explaining early Buddhist teachings, and more famous sermons like sermons Dhamma Chak sorry this what you call the Ratana Sutta, Mangala Sutta, and we already discussed the but this Dhaniya Gopala Sutta, and again very interesting suttas are quite highlighted there, and most of them are actually talking about some philosophical aspects as well as some interesting teachings of the Buddha. Now this Uraga Sutta actually give some interesting point where Buddha taking again and again the activity of shedding out a worn out skin of a serpent. Now serpent, as you know, they are the ones who are, crawling, and in a given time they come up with a worn out skin and they want to shed it out. They want to leave it aside. And so Buddha use this simile to teach us one of his various interesting teachings, where a monk, where another practitioner has to relinquish various levels of defilements or various kinds of delusions available in his mind. So on the other hand, what we used to do is always to keep everything with us without leaving aside. Say for example, if you have a kind of a self-view, you are trying to protect it, you want to safeguard it, and you think that is the most important thing. And in order to confirm that self-view, in order to confirm your position, maybe your designation, you are trying various things. Maybe you are maybe trying to convince others that you are so and so, and you are proving yourself, your abilities, your skills, in order to show that you are a particular person, you are a special person. And sometimes we adorn ourselves to show ourselves, and we may take various exams to adorn ourselves to show ourselves. So likewise, we are trying to promote a self-view and to protect that self-view, and we are doing various things. And sometimes assume that we are doing well, so then we don't think of going out at all. Going out in the sense to look for a kind of a freedom is beyond our scope because we are now doing well. But on the other hand, sometimes we come across various difficulties and certain tragic situations. And on such occasions, probably we may think of an alternative rather than simply going around again and again on the typical life cycle. Sometimes we want to think about a separate or different kind of an alternative. So that is also possible. But that sometimes happens rarely because we are trying our best to safeguard ourselves. So to take various insurances and take all the safety precautions and go for the body checkups and all sorts of things we do because we want to confirm ourselves. We want to feel comfortable. We want to feel sort of firm, determined, safe. But on the other hand, whenever life brings us a lot of problems, brings us a lot of accidents, incidents, and unpredicted situations, then actually sometimes the whole thing trembled and we get shocked. We didn't even imagine this kind of things going to happen. Now in Sri Lanka, I don't know whether some we didn't actually think how this kind of a thing would going to happen. So probably we might have thought everything would happen smoothly. So we have selected a particular government and they will do the best. That is how almost all of us might have thought. But things all of a sudden change. So similarly, in our all individual lives also, we are trying to confirm ourselves, trying to affirm ourselves. But sometimes it doesn't work out. Sometimes things go wrong. And everything go ups and upside down. And on such occasions, probably we want to look around what would be the best solution. What are the alternatives available? Otherwise, we simply continue with our old habits. Actually, we don't want to get out of our old habits. Rather, we want to protect our old habits. Our habits are the ones actually shaping our lives. And therefore, we want to protect those habits. And we become very much like a servant to our habits, kind of a slave to our habits. But if someone come and tell us, okay, you should not have this habit, you better put it outside, you better remove it, you better think newly, you better look for a different kind of freedom. So then sometimes we don't want to invest time, because that kind of investigation could be risky even. Because we are already settled, we are established, our account has some money, our children are doing well, our husband, our wife doing well, our relations are doing well, country is doing well. So we don't want to think anything new, because things are doing well. So if someone come and tell us, okay, you better look for something different, then actually we don't want to look around, because we are doing well. But sometimes we heard, okay, there's a far situation, another country is facing a tragic situation. Maybe some group of people are facing a tragic situation. Sometimes certain people are quite sensitive and they want to think about it. They want to think a new alternative. But most of the others actually don't care about it because it didn't happen to them. And on the other hand, on certain other occasions, maybe a tragic situation happened to one of our relatives. Then some of us are quite sensitive and we are thinking seriously about what has happened and we want to take a kind of a radical path. We want to simply go out of the typical cycle. Because our one of the relative has faced a tragic situation. So that has kind of a triggering in our mind. But some others actually don't even sensitive to that kind of a situation. They simply continue their typical old lifestyle, old habits, they are simply continuing. Sometimes such kind of a tragic situation happened to one of our close relations, to our husband, to our wife, to our children, to our parent, to our brother, sister. So very close relation, maybe going through a kind of a situation that actually sometimes shock us. So that sometimes make a jerk that I want to think a kind of an alternative. I want to think about freedom. Why should I entrapped in this typical lifestyle? Are there any alternatives? Is there a way to change my life? The way of thinking. And certain others, even they are not bothered about even such things, so they continue their typical lifestyle. But on the other hand, sometimes certain tragic situation happens to ourselves, directly to us. On such situation, sometimes we feel terrible, we feel a sort of unsafe, and we feel that what we were doing is not that wise, we better look around for a new alternative, a different kind of a solution, a way out of this typical path. So this kind of an attitude sometimes build when we ourselves face a tragic situation. So likewise, people take the initiative to find out alternative path, find out freedom at different stages. Sometimes they do at their early stages, sometimes they do while they are sort of going through a family life, and sometimes they do after taking the after 60 so maybe. Sometimes it is too late. And here in this Serpent Sutta, Uraga Sutta, Buddha's invitation is very much like how to give up our old habits, how to give up our traditional thinking, kind of to which actually we become very much programmed, we become somewhat conditioned. Our mind is fairly programmed to think in a particular manner. So is it possible for us to think newly, think differently, out of the box? Are we ready to do that? Now, Buddha actually pointing out this, so again and again he highlights how a serpent shedding off the worn out skin. So worn out skin is something that he has to left aside time to time. And according to the commentary, so it is mentioned when the serpent is shedding out the old skin, so there are four factors that concerning about it, and basically it is he is doing a kind of a law according to its tradition or according to its species. You know, the other animals don't do that kind of a thing, worn out skin, they are not doing it. But these serpents are the ones only doing this worn out skin shedding out, and this is a kind of a activity specified to that particular species. And they do with disgust. There is no any desire to keep the worn out skin. Actually, it was the skin protected that particular serpent for a long time. It is the sheath appeared to protect it. But now they don't want it. Now this particular serpent wants to have the new skin, and now very much like disgusted about the existing old skin. Now it wants to leave it aside. Maybe it's circling around a kind of a wood, maybe a tree or a cavity, and using the help of that it wants to get rid of it. And assume that the serpent has little bit removed it, but some part is still hanging. So then the according to the sutta, so Buddha's mentioned that when a part of it is removed, a part of it is still hanging with the body, so the serpent is a kind of a disgusting attitude towards that worn out skin, because it want to remove it immediately, as quickly as possible, because it doesn't want it. And therefore there's a kind of a disgust towards the existing skin, the old skin. And on the other hand, it sometimes get the help of another tree or another kind of a cavity, using which so it is getting certain kind of a support to remove the worn out skin. And with some effort it has to be done. So I mean, if you don't do anything, if the serpent don't do anything, the worn out skin doesn't fall out, rather it will hang around. So there is a certain amount of effort is required in order to remove it. Now very beautifully these points actually are related to the monk's life, to the yogi's life. So how he or she wants to purify himself. So there are also a kind of a situation in the yogi's side like this serpent is doing. So the yogi also has kind of a tradition. So that is the ancient noble tradition. So if you can remember Buddha pointing out the Aryavamsa Sutta, so Buddha mentioned, so all these traditions, all these practices are not unique to this particular Buddha. I mean, these are quite ancient traditions followed by millions of arahants minions of the Buddhas. So this is a tradition of the Aryans, this is a tradition of the nobles. So assume that we are today trying our best to practice, then we are also doing the same thing, trying to do the same thing. So very much like, so it's a specific feature of this particular species, the nobles. And on the other hand, when we recognize, okay, what we were thinking is wrong, what we understood is because of our delusion. We had a kind of a delusion, and those are not something to keep. What we were holding, what we were grasping, are not worthy of grasping. So whenever we come across this kind of insight, then sometimes we feel disgusted of why we are holding it. Why are we still attached to things? And the question comes from our side. Our own mind sometimes questions us, so why are we still holding these things? So therefore, it's very much like kind of a dispassion arise towards the existing things. And without a problem, now a yogi, a practitioner is slowly preparing himself to leave aside things, to relinquish things. And sometimes he or she may feel a little disgusted about the mind, because mind again and again go and grasp. Even though we have understood the realities, still mind didn't give up the old habit. So sometimes we feel disgusted about the activity of the mind. So we have enough seen the non-self nature. Maybe we have seen enough about the unsatisfactory nature. We have seen enough the impermanent nature, but still mind didn't give up. Still mind want to keep. Still mind want to possess. Mind want to say that this belongs to me. Mind want to go through a kind of a self-affirmative thoughts. Then probably we may feel a little disgusted. Why this idiot is doing this? Why this fellow is still doing this? Even though I have understood this experientially, I have gone through maybe mindfulness practice, I have done fair amount of hard work, but still mind is not liberated. So sometimes we feel a little disgusted. So that is also involved. And on the other hand, we sometimes can't do it alone. We need to get a help of the Buddha, his teaching, his guidance, and maybe the guidance of a Kalyanamitta. Because sometimes to finding out it by our own, it's quite difficult. So what are the already available paths? What are the already proven paths? So that is something we are searching from the Buddha's teaching. So what are the sort of correct path that Buddha himself has discovered and then preached to many others, and they too have followed it and they too have liberated? So what are the techniques available? And we are searching them, we are trying to investigate them, trying to learn from them and get the guidance from them. So with that help, particularly from the Kalyanamittas, what we are getting, so it is quite immense. Actually, Buddha is the great Kalyanamitta, and he has given a kind of a great example, and we are have faith on him, and we are also now trying to faithfully follow the teaching, and we ourselves slowly, time to time, experience certain amount of freedom. So therefore we are getting the support of the Buddha's teaching and from his example and the other fellow practitioners, Kalyanamittas, so that is also there. And on the other hand, we have to have our own effort. So even though the teachers are there, even though the Buddha's teaching is available, many others are following it, if we are not putting effort by ourselves, nothing will happen. So basically we have to put our own effort, then only the results would be possible. So therefore, when consider the shedding of the worn out skin by a serpent with disgust, which is, and again with effort and with the support of something else, and again which is unique to their species, and this can have a kind of an analogy between what a practitioner is doing. And the very first verse is mentioned like this: Yo uppatitam vineti kodam visatam sappa visansa osa dehi so bhikkhu jahati ora parang urago jinnamiva tacham puran. Yo uppatitam vineti kodam. Now here Buddha talks first about the anger. So if one is trying to remove anger arisen in one's mind, how? Visatam sappa visansa osa dehi. So like kind of the what you call this poison, the venom of a snake, when it is available, assume that you go through a snake bite and now the venom is available. Now we are applying certain maybe herbals and different things to remove it. So Buddha mentioned, now anger is something like that. So now you are very much like bitten by a snake. You are now angry. So don't keep the venom. Don't keep that poisonous venom. Now you got to remove it. You need to apply the herbs, medicines. So Buddha mentioned, So bhikkhu jahati ora parang urago jinnamiva tacham purana. So now this particular practitioner is removing that venom, removing that anger, like a worn out skin shed off by a serpent. Now you can recognize how Buddha actually beautifully combined these two activities. Now two similes actually given here. One simile is kind of a snake bite, that you already have certain poisonous venom now that has to be quickly removed, otherwise you will be in a big trouble. So you have to carefully remove it, quickly remove it. So similarly Buddha mentioned, if the mind is now burning with anger, don't keep it. So if you are keeping it, if you are nurturing it, if you are promoting it, then you are the ones ultimately going to suffer. There may be various other parties involved, and probably you may be correct, you may be telling the truth, but the other parties may be wrong. But who is the one burning? Who is the one suffering? No one else, that is ourselves. So there Buddha highlights how one has to remove anger without keeping it in the mind. So if we are trying to rationalize anger in our mind, so we never going to remove it. So we may be 100% correct, the other party may be 100% wrong. But if we are burning with anger, there is something wrong in our sight. So that is something that we need to have a kind of a introspection, to have a kind of an inward attitude, and to find out, why am I burning with anger? Why am I keeping it? Why am I promoting it? Is there any benefit from this for me? So by reflecting like that, now one should be ready to remove it, like you are trying to remove the poisonous venom when a snake bite happens. And on the other hand, with the other simile, like a serpent trying to remove the worn out skin from its body, one has to remove the existing anger in one's mind. And not only here, various other places Buddha highlight how one has to remove the anger. So jine, so akko dena jine koda. Now this is an interesting point Buddha highlights, where one has to remove anger through non-anger. Akko dena jine koda. Assume that another person is also angry, and now you are in a kind of a heated argument. But on such occasion, if you two are going on and trying to attack, so then going to have a big trouble. So if you know very well that the other person is angry, then you better not get angry. So it is mentioned that when you know the other party is angry, then you should not promote that anger. Rather, you should have some patience to calm down yourself, not promoting anger. So if we are trying to promote anger, if you are trying to promote the kind of that kind of a burning situation, then actually the whole both parties going to suffer. So therefore, most of us sometimes don't want to accept. We don't want to accept maybe our own fault. Rather, we want to always put the error to the other side, find the fault in the other side. And we are not ready to humbly accept our own fault. So those are there. And we may be quite conceited, and we may feel superior. So in such situations, actually, there is very difficult or very narrow possibilities there to sort out the situation. But on the other hand, when we very well know the other party is quite angry, and there may be various reasons, but at this moment I shouldn't react. If I also get angry, then both sides are going to suffer. So likewise, we should be able to calm down ourselves, not to react immediately. And on the other hand, whenever we are keeping things for ourselves without think newly, as I said previously, so we are very much like stagnating ourselves. So we are fairly comfortable with the existing living, with the existing patterns, with the, say, our own habits, then we never think of going out of it. So that is also, we can recognize from the whole theme of this Serpent Sutta. And these are areas that we slowly hope to point out. And I hope this is enough for today's sermon. And now I like to open the session for questions.
We have four questions at the moment. Chatavi is not here yet, so I will start reading the questions. Yeah. First one is mindful sitting. Give me a minute, I must miss the spot on that one. Yes. Dear Bhante, I mostly practice sitting meditation daily for about 45 minutes to 1 hour. After sitting and concentrating to the rising and falling of abdomen, it quickly fades away and my mind and body settle down. Some days without proper concentration to the Kamatahan, my body and mind settle down very quickly. I feel very relaxed, but my mind wanders everywhere after settling, and very quickly it notifies to me and take it back to my body. Again going away and take it back. This is the process happening about 40 minutes during my meditation. And when alarm goes, I stop my meditation. I don't have bodily sensation. I don't have anything to hang on to concentrate. Appreciate your thoughts on this and guidance for improvement. As I feel a big change of my behavior and bit cooler mind, I continue my meditation. Not too sure if that was too clear. Do you want me to read it again, Sana?
No, I think I was able to understand the question. So basically, as you have pointed out, so whenever there is a gross object, when the meditation object, primary object, is quite possible to recognize, so then we have something to hang around, so to concentrate. So therefore, we can easily maintain mindfulness. But interesting point here is, as we continue our practice, so this object of our attention start to sort of refine. It becomes subtler and subtler. So when it becomes subtler, so we don't have kind of a rigid something to hold on to. As a result of that, now mind wanders. Now, do you think that the solution to this is to find out the rigid or to find out a gross object? It is not. Because what we need to do is to refine our mindfulness so that even with a subtle object, we can maintain our mindfulness. So actually, through this kind of situation only we can learn it. Through these kinds of faults, shortcomings only we can improve ourselves, because at the beginning the object may be quite visible, perceivable. As a result of that, we can maintain mindfulness, but as we are continuing the practice, it becomes subtler and subtler, then our mindfulness waver. So still now mind start to distract. Now we need to continue our practice. As we continue, the thing going to happen is that even when the mind get distracted, you won't stay longer there. You may not go through kind of a long storytelling. Rather, your mind quickly returns. But even if it returns quickly, there is nothing to hold strongly. So that is the kind of a challenge that we are having. But our duty is the same process. Can't help, there is no other alternative. You can find out another object which is more grosser than the existing one, but that is not the solution. Solution lies where you are patiently doing the same thing. Even though mind distracted, it doesn't want to be in the outside, it want to come back. But after coming back also, there is no strong object to hold on. But there may be a subtle sensation we are now trying to carefully hold, maintaining there, carefully maintain our attention there. So that is again and again we have to do. Then one day, so as our sensitivity of the mind improves, as our mindfulness sharpens, then slowly we would be able to maintain that mindfulness even with these subtle objects. The object is not gross, but it's quite subtle. It's almost like disappeared. But without any distraction, you can maintain your mindfulness. So that is the kind of accomplishment that we need to do. That is something kind of the direction that we need to target. I mean, that we have to do with trial and error. Can't help. I mean, mind get distracted again and again. We have to bring it back. Keep it with the subtle breath or subtle sensation, subtle rising and falling. One day you will be successful. Even when breath is not available, you can maintain the mindfulness. You can maintain concentration. Even the, say, rising and falling completely disappeared, still you can maintain your attention within the body. So this is a kind of a skill that we need to develop. That we need to develop practically. So therefore, you have to patiently do it. Then definitely you will one day, you can report, yes, now even the object is not there, but I can maintain mindfulness.
Question number 2 of 6. This mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, I used to practice well before COVID, developing a daily practice and participated in multiple retreats in Australia and New Zealand. Due to the disruptions in my job and the living, I could not do any regular practice during the last 2 years. However, every Sunday I connect to this program and much merits for your service. Since this is a short practice session, after the guided time, I immediately start opening up to listen to the sound of silence and try to stay in the relaxed zone for the next 30 minutes. I observe the calmness, distractions in the mind and keep vigilant on the thoughts during this time. The systematic refinement of the breath and the practice I have cultivated around it, utilizing 1 hour to 1.5 hours, got replaced by this quick method to adapt to 30 minutes and observe in the mind predominantly. Looks like I have forgotten Kayanupassana. Thought of checking with Bhante for any advice if necessary. With metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. By the way, I mean, if you're confident and again, if you can manage it, then there is no harm, because now your mindfulness has fairly refined and clear comprehension is also there, and you are in a region where you can recognize the sound of silence. So that indicates fair amount of calmness is already available in your mind. And now you are paying attention to the mind objects or various thoughts, various mental states. No harm. Actually, sometimes in the future, probably you can revisit Kayanupassana if necessary. But now it seems like you can continue with what you are doing, because fairly you are established in the Chittanupassana. Now slowly allow the mind to little wander. Now don't entertain any kind of a forceful restriction to the mind. Rather, maintain a fair amount of mindfulness, but give some freedom to the mind to freely wander. But be vigilant. When it is wandering, check where it is going. When it is going and grasping, you got to recognize now it has grasped. Again, it has burdened. And then you have to slowly relinquish it. Slowly leave it aside. And you can use various methods, Chittanupassana techniques, like recognizing the grasping. And once it is recognized, you may feel little burden, you may feel little frustrated, or you feel uncomfortable. Then why are we maintaining this kind of uncomfortable grasping state? Why can't I return back to that simplicity? So now you are returning back to the simplicity, that non-grasping state, just the simple awareness. And assume that you can even recognize when the grasping happens, how you sort of contributed towards that, how you participated in that construction, how you step by step go through that preparation, construction, the sankata nature, conditioned nature. So once you recognize that, that also help us to unentangle the whole thing and return back to that simplicity. So likewise, various methods are there. So if you are able to continue confidently, then no need to go back to Kayanupassana immediately. Rather, you can continue this practice as much as possible.
Question number 3 of 6. This is a Dhamma sermon question. Dear Venerable Bhante, thank you for selecting this sutta teaching. When you mentioned that habitual nature of mind, repetitiveness, although after knowing its mind, I was feeling disgusted about the mind. You are spot on. On that you said, I am there. I am not bothered about anger or lust that come and go, but rather how the clinging happens. I don't have an urge to like or dislike, but it's the detailness and too much options out there pulls the attention. During the day, I feel hours are passing. Things come and go. Sometimes even without food or water, time passes by. There are some old things come in and knock on the door saying you should apologize to so and so. But I have lost the drive. Your advice is much appreciated. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Actually, if the request is coming for you to apologize, on such occasions, we can do so if we recognize, okay, there is something wrong in my side. I did something wrong. I was not mindful. The fault is in my hand. So on such occasions, be a little mild, soft, quite humble, helps us to develop. Rather than sort of maintaining a very dry-hearted attitude, we better come down. We better be on the ground and always ready to apologize. So that's a very interesting quality that we as human beings that we can maintain. Because the wisdom that Buddha recommends actually makes us humble. Because what we more and more understand is that because of the delusion that we are maintaining wrong attitudes, or wrong perceptions, sanya vipallas. So others are also doing the same thing. I at least now understood to some extent that I am maintaining some wrong attitudes or wrong perceptions. But others still they are doing or acting wrongly because they didn't even understood that. So therefore I have to little sympathetic towards the others. So likewise we can look at the situation from different angles. And on the other hand, even though we understood it, still mind goes through the old pattern. So that is the interesting point. So that is where even available to a noble person, you don't need to worry thinking that it is happening only to you. But Buddha mentioned it is common even to a Sotapanna, even to a Sakadagami, even to an Anagami. So only an Arahant we can consider as the perfect person. But all the other nobles even, they also feel disgusted of what this mind is doing. This is a very interesting point. Actually, if you can refer Indriya Bhavana Sutta, so there Buddha mentioned, so when grasping happens, when mind gets excited, when mind gets agitated, so Buddha mentioned this noble person, he feels disgusted. Attiyati harayati jiguchati. So he feels disgusted of this old habit of the mind. And he feels ashamed of what mind is doing. Now with that shame, with that disgusted attitude, now he quickly returns back to that non-grasping state. He didn't want to go through this typical, you know, little cumbersome insight meditative techniques. Rather, this very disgust could be enough for the mind to return back. It's very much like a little child not being, I mean, assume that a little child is doing something wrong. And then his mother or his father is little showing the unpleasant or non-approving attitude towards the child. What are you doing? So then the child himself may understand, okay, my mother didn't approve what I'm doing. My father didn't approve what I'm doing. So that very attitude could be enough for the child to stop it and to return back to the correct path. So likewise, our mind also sometimes act like a child. Even though we are trying to maintain wisdom, it didn't want to maintain it. It didn't want to behave well. Rather like a little child, go and grasp things, behave wrongly. And we have to be somewhat self-compassionate towards ourselves, have to be a little sympathetic towards ourselves to slowly correct ourselves. I mean, we can't immediately do it, even though we theoretically understand the path, even though through the practice we understand the path to some extent, still a lot of latent tendencies are operating. Those were there for a long time. So yeah, therefore, we have to carefully correct ourselves. So don't worry, therefore. Basically, this is how Buddha mentioned, even to a Sotapanna, Sakadagami, Anagami, about their operation of the mind. They too go through this kind of a process. So there is no argument about us. We simply have to patiently go through the process. How to have that attitude, how to have the corrective attitude that I, even though it takes time, I am doing it. I am not stopping. I am continuing with my practice. I am trying to purify myself. So likewise, that positive attitude is quite important. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 6 is a general question. Dear Bhante, can anyone achieve enlightenment while practicing Satara Satipatthana only? Or is it necessary to practice other types, as an example, pilikul metta meditation of meditation simultaneously? How do you get to know which meditation method should go with Satara Satipatthana? Thank for your valuable time and guidance toward meditation. That's the another question.
Yeah, actually, if you are referring the Asubha Bhavana, actually Asubha Bhavana is part of Kayanupassana. So if you refer Kayanupassana, it has 14 methods, meditation techniques explained. And there are 9 referring the decaying corpse. One is referring human corpse going through various stages of decaying. And that is a type of Asubha Bhavana. So you are putting your body into the same perspective of the decaying corpse, and you understand, okay, this body also going through that kind of a situation, that is the reality. So therefore the conceit can be eliminated, the lust can be eliminated. So that is 9 objects are mentioned in Kayanupassana, and on the other hand that is called Navasivatika, and on the other hand Asubha Bhavana Patikula Manasikara is also there in the Kayanupassana. So Buddha mentioned that this body consists of 32 bodily parts. None of them are attractive, rather they are quite loathsome. So that is also included. So therefore, in the Satipatthana practice, Asubha Bhavana is included. On the other hand, it doesn't mean that we have to always have them. Have in the sense, I mean, always that we need to practice them. Because at the beginning of our practice, Yes, it is true that we may need, because our defilements are quite strong, hindrances are quite strong, lust is quite strong. As a result of that, I mean, you can't immediately practice anapanasati or rising and falling, dhatu manasikara, etc. Because lust is so strong, probably you may need to practice a little bit of asubha bhavana that helps to bring the mind to the middle. But later, suppose now you are practicing anapanasati, rising and falling, or dhatu manasikara for a long time, and now even you have practiced vedananupassana, now you are observing the mind, you are practicing cittanupassana or dhammanupassana. Now, fair amount of mindfulness is already available and fair amount of clear comprehension is already available. So then you have to have some confidence, even though lust arise, I can handle it. I don't need to go use asubha bhavana. Rather, I should try first with mindfulness. Because now lust is arising, so I am fully aware of how lust is arising. And with mindfulness, when you see it properly, objectively, then the lust may fade away, because I am not promoting it now. I am not feeding it. I am not strengthening it. As a result of that, the lust may start to fade away. So likewise, yes, at the beginning of the practice, we may get the support of the four guardian meditations like Metta, Asubha, Buddhanusati, Maranasati. But later, as the confidence develop, we can fully keep the confidence with the four Satipatthana, because Satipatthana is a fairly comprehensive practice and it ends up with the Four Noble Truths. So that shows us how Buddha has very much designed it. So therefore, Satipatthana practice then become a fairly comprehensive practice, and where you don't need the maybe the four guardian meditations anymore. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 6. Dear, it's a general question again. Dear Swami Mahansa, I have been practicing sitting meditation for more than a year, and now I can recognize my bad thoughts, such as anger, jealousy, etc., immediately arising in my mind. In the past, I haven't had this capability, and I went around bad thoughts while creating stories. Now I can clearly understand that some sort of improvement and mindfulness about my thoughts. Is there any method to get rid of bad thoughts? What should I do? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, now this very observation, very recognition, helps you to slowly abandon them. That is where Buddha very beautifully mentioned, Janato bhikkhave pasato asavanam khayam vadam. No ajanato, no apasato. So only for the person who clearly knows, who clearly sees, to him I call, to him I declare that the eradication of asavas, stains, defilements are possible. So therefore, the mindfulness practice helps us to recognize our own faults, recognize our own habit patterns, the wrong way of thinking, various defilements available in the mind. And we don't need to get discouraged. I mean, how many defilements are there? How much defilements are there? When am I going to abandon all these things? I mean, this kind of attitude can develop, because, I mean, it's quite, I mean, even though I am practicing for a long time, still defilements are happening. So I might get discouraged. When am I going to eliminate all these bad thoughts? So the question can come. But carefully we need to continue, because the practice may not happen immediately. We can't expect quick enlightenment. So Buddha actually gave a very practical example, like he mentioned about how a warning out happened in a handle of an axe. Probably you might have heard about this simile. So assume that someone is using an axe to cut trees, and it has a strong handle, and when he is doing it daily, so slowly that handle start to worn out, wear out, and one day he may understand, like, actually I can't use it anymore, I have to replace the handle. So this is the kind of understanding that all of a sudden comes, because that handle is now completely worn out. Now you have to put a new handle, new, whatever the stick. So similarly, Buddha mentioned, you can't recognize daily, because of your practice, how much of defilements that you have removed. You can't recognize it, you can't measure it. But because of the continuous practice, one day you may understood, okay, fair amount of defilements have, say, removed or at least depleted, somewhat weakened. Now my mind is fairly calm, peaceful. I'm not going through much of an agitation. I'm not going through much of burning situations. Rather, mind maintain its calmness, clarity. So likewise, after a long time only, we may understood, yes, I am continuing the practice. Because of that, as a result of that, mind has gone through that kind of an improvement. So actually, the patience is a extremely relevant factor here, because we as practitioners, sometimes we want to quickly abandon all the defilements. That may not happen immediately. So we have to understand, I mean, this is a slow process. We can't have quick results. And on the other hand, nowadays, actually, in the physical world, in the economic world, we are being programmed to have quick results. That's the problem. We want everything to be available within a fraction of a second. With the pressing of a button, should be available. Everything should be available. But we can't apply that theory to the mind. It's a kind of a natural process that we need to go through. And then we have to continue the practice. As we are continuing it, slowly it may happen. And again, we can trust from the scientific point of view. Here, actually, what we are going through is kind of a neuroplasticity, where it takes time. And then the brain also get sort of rearranged very much. Like, yeah.
Question number 6. This is the last question. It's a general question. Dear Bhante, I try not to dwell too much on the current adverse situations in the world, but focus on my mind and the practice. However, again and again, I go and tangle with these. The war, the economic situations around the world, the political situation in Sri Lanka, etc., etc. Is this keles or karma, Bhante? That's the end of the question.
I think maybe both we can say, actually, because we all as humans probably... We might have gone through certain amount of situations, and it could be a little karma as well. But on the other hand, this is the typical situation of the human realm. I mean, you can't think of something quite peaceful during the Buddha's time. And probably you may think, okay, I mean, only today we have all these troubles. And if I was born during the Buddha's period, I mean, I should have done everything. Everything was quite smooth. And it is not. And probably you can understand how Buddha went through various wars. And you can remember, say during the Buddha's period, King Pasenadi Kosala. So he went through many battles. And King Ajasattha, he went through many battles. And Buddha's whole clan, the Sakyan clan, completely abolished by this King Vidudaba. Actually, Buddha wanted to stop it. Twice he tried. When King Vidudaba was going towards the Sakyan kingdom, so Buddha understood that he is going to kill all the Sakyans, and he wanted to stop it. And what he did was, he recognized kind of just a single tree on the way towards the Sakyan kingdom. When the army is coming with this King Vidudaba, just Buddha is sitting there. And then King Vidudaba recognized Buddha, and he approached him and asked, Bhante, I mean, there are a lot of trees around. Why are you staying here? Where this tree doesn't have any leaves even. Why are you sitting here? Then what Buddha mentioned was, even the wind coming from the Sakyan kingdom is sort of pleasing to me. It's a kind of an indication that he didn't approve what King Vidudaba is doing. He didn't directly tell, okay, please abandon war, don't kill Sakyans. Like that he didn't say. Rather, he indicated that he wished the long life of the Sakyans. So then King Vidudaba understood that, he returned back. But again King Vidudaba comes with another army. Again Buddha understood, now this fellow is going to kill my relatives. Again Buddha did the same thing. The same thing happened, King Vidudaba returned. Now for the third time, King Vidudaba is coming with the army. Now Buddha reflect and he understood, yes, can't help. These Sakyans have their own karma and certain may not have their karma. So likewise, he didn't go to intervene. So then King Vidudaba go and kill most of the Sakyans. So this is whole human realm is actually filled with all these tragic situations. Sometimes a certain kingdom become powerful and they want to invade another kingdom. And sometimes they become weaker and they being invaded by another kingdom. So likewise, this is the human realm that we are born with, born to, and can't escape in the sense, I mean, this is how it is conditioned world is working. And actually, there's an interesting story that King Sakta is coming and ask, that he is asking, I mean, these kings, so these the humans and even the heavenly realms, those celestial beings, they want to live harmoniously. But why are they quarreling? Why are they arguing? So interesting question. So our question King Sakta has asked. And then Buddha actually go through a kind of a long answer. So because of the miserliness, because of the having something more likable, more preferred things. And so likewise, a kind of a continuous answer is given in the Sakkapanha Sutta. Probably we can discuss this later. So likewise, this is a kind of a nature, not only in the human realm, even with the God realms, this is there. So there was an old story of kind of a war happened between the celestial beings, the gods, and the asuras, Sura and Asura Sangrama. So that also has happened. Hopefully now it is over and now they may be living peacefully. Now only the war between the Russia and Ukraine is available. Anyway, so this is the human realm. So we can't expect perfection in this realm. So on the other hand, actually sometimes I listen to Ajahn Sumedho. So he points out, he highlight, this is not the place for our safe living. Rather, this is a quite unsafe place. Human realm is a quite unsafe realm. And again, it is filled with a lot of sankhara, filled with a lot of uncertainties. It's a conditioned world. So we can't expect complete happiness, complete perfection in the conditioned world because these conditions are quite vulnerable. So therefore, we need to find out a way out. So what is the safe dwelling place? Where are we finding out kind of a refuge? Can we find out a refuge in the conditioned world? So these are the questions actually we need to ask. Are we going to find out a permanent solution in the conditioned world? Are there such permanent solution available in the conditioned world? So, or else Buddha point out a different answer. Is there a solution outside the conditioned world? Is there any other alternative solution? Then we need to search that in that angle. Then it becomes a career, kind of a Arya Pariyesana, kind of a noble invest, noble quest, noble investigation. Because if we are trying to find out a conditioned answer in the conditioned world, so this answer not going to last for a long time. So this is kind of a reality that we need to understand as practitioners. So even though we go through a lot of problems, this is kind of common thing to the whole human realm, not only to this time, even to the past, maybe to the future as well.
Bhante, we just got another quick question. It's a continuation of a previous question, but we've run out of time. Do you have a few more minutes?
Yeah, fine.
So this is regarding the previous question where you, I think, asked Arjun to apologize. The continuation is this, dear Venerable Bhante, you mentioned that it's good to apologize, but communication can mean various things and be interpreted differently. So that's just a statement there. I think it's a continuation where you said to apologize. Yeah.
So don't apologize through an email. So you better, because it can cause another misunderstanding. So better you meet and honestly apologize, so that if there is any wrong misunderstanding, then you can communicate face to face. And so likewise, actually these days, even though many communication methods are available, as you said, sometimes it aggravates the situation, because sometimes we send an SMS, we send a WhatsApp message, we send an email, but the other party didn't understand it well. Because the human communication, I mean, we have really separated basically because of these methods sometimes. Now, in the good old days, so we didn't have these methods that we need to go and talk with the person. Then we have a very good, interaction between the human. Now, I mean, we are interacting through devices. So it's kind of an interesting point. Now, say, husband and wife talking through the cell phone, through WhatsApp. Children are talking to each other through WhatsApp. So where are we going? So basically, I mean, whenever we are directly interacting, then actually we are looking at the other's face. We can understand their attitude. We can understand how they are, say, facial expressions. And are they really understood what I have talked? So actually this direct communication is the best as far as possible. I mean, now, since the COVID is also fairly all right, I mean, we can promote this direct interaction with humans. I feel that is much better than writing an email or WhatsApp or whatever it is. So this help us to have kind of close relationship, kind of an understandable relationship. And that helps, I feel.
So that's the end of the questions, and we have gone over time, so we will finish the program for today. So to end the program, I would first like to thank Bhante for giving up his valuable time in participating in this program and providing us with the guidance for the mindfulness practice and also answering our questions and also enriching our Dhamma knowledge with the Dhamma talk. We would first like to pass our merits to Bhante. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Also, we would like to pass our merits to everyone, both seen and unseen, who are enabling this program, and also the participants for joining the program and presenting questions and encouraging the organizers to make this program possible. Until next time, Theruvan Saranai, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Yeah, Theruvan Saranai.